Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang podcast. That's Buddy Guy, and I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Singing the blues south of the river.
Graham Thickens.
And what a guy you are, Steve.
And Phil Wilson.
Hey, how are you?
Not bad, happy, not bad.
Happy 200th, huh?
It's the 200th.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why you chose the blues on our 200th episode.
Because I love the blues, and plus I found a Buddy Guy on Music Alley, a Podsafe song that we could use. It's like, what? Buddy Guy? He's actually famous.
Yeah.
So I thought, what the heck? Give it a shot.
I had to laugh at the technical problems that you were having just before you recorded today. After listening last night to the first episode, where we had all sorts of technical problems.
Did we really? I'll have to listen to it. Yeah, I should have.
Garrick was on at that time, and it took him the entire podcast to join. And then he lasted for about 2 minutes before he dropped.
I remember that. Yeah. Of course, I'm always amazed at how many tech podcasts I listen to. Gilmore Gang is probably the best example of tech guys that are just clueless about how to sound good and how to use the technology. I think that's
intentional.
Do you really? All right.
Yeah. I think that's just the way that Steve Gilmore likes to record.
Okay. All right. So what's different now than what was going on in Minnesota Tech over 4 years ago?
Almost five now. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's certainly grown. The community, the number of startups, we've lost some, but I think we've gained a whole hell of a lot more than we've lost.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to say the amount of funding has grown, but it hasn't really. And 2008 was probably a bad year because that was the year of the financial crash. What month did we do our first podcast?
June.
Okay, so we launched ahead of the fall 2008. Implosion.
Yeah, it was already starting to downtrend, but
coincidence?
No, Phil, correlation is not causation, but let's hope. Anyway, let's hope we didn't bring down the world economy.
He broke the economy.
and at least the tech community didn't implode. I mean, it grew. So, mobile was just taken off in early 2008, isn't that when the App Store launched, the Apple App Store, in about, was it June of 2008?
Yeah, it was right around, wasn't it at the Worldwide Developers Conference?
Probably, yeah. And all of a sudden we had a burst of growth with a lot of app developers here in the community taking off, DoApp being the first to really jump on it. And they've certainly continued to do well. And many, many other developers suddenly started coding for iOS apps.
Well, and then we had Ben Edwards and Luke Frantzel's Minibar and Mini Demo really start to take off in late 2008.
Yep.
Oh, so yeah.
That was a biggie, too, because now there was a place where people could connect, they could show their stuff, all that. So, well, I remember, Tim, you had a prediction of a breakout Minnesota tech company back then, right?
Yeah. Within the next year or two is what I said.
And
obviously that has not happened.
So there's not an equivalent to Google in Minnesota?
Although we're getting closer, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think there's a definite possibility that, you know, something like SmartThings or Code 42 or one of these that's out there will really break out.
Yeah.
Well, I would
agree.
Some would say Code 42, you know, already has in a big way, and that they landed that $52 million, what, less than a year ago or about a year ago. That certainly put them over the top of any funding that had come before for an internet-based kind of a startup. So, they aren't close to going IPO or anything like that. But I think it's going to be classified as a breakout company one day soon here if people aren't already considering it.
Well, the other one that I keep thinking about is Jamf Software.
Oh yeah, there's another one.
Because you know these guys I've sat through a bunch of their, been down to a couple of meetings there and conferences and done some deep dives on their product. And I got to tell you that these guys, oh my God, if you're doing any kind of a corporate rollout or a school district rollout or anything, you're going to use Jamf because they're just, I mean, it's just awesome. But what I look at is that the fact that they can, you know, they've figured out all these processes and they can do it with other platforms. And they still haven't really moved. I mean, they really still are iOS and Mac centric, but they don't have to be.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is because the education market, which has become such a big part of what they do, is so, you know, particularly iPad driven these days.
Yeah,
that they've got a lot of tools and technology to help schools deal with that, right, Steve?
Yeah,
they're definitely a winner, and they're a company that hasn't had to raise much outside funding, if at all. I mean, they haven't taken a VC infusion that I'm aware of. They've pretty well self-grown that thing, and they've got to be damn near as big as Code 42 now. You know, 100-150 employees, maybe.
Yeah, I wonder.
They're definitely one of our local winners, and they were like virtually unknown to most of the community 4 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I knew about them only because I had run into their one outside investor, who's the chairman of their board, a guy named Jim Hansen. And I remember running into him on a flight to San Francisco, and we're waiting to get on the flight, and he's telling me he just invested in this little company called Jamf. And I go, "Your what hurts?" You know, yeah. It's like, "Ooh, Jamf, what the hell is that?" You know, never, ever had heard of it. And that was probably about 07 or in that range somewhere. So, yeah, they've come a long way.
Wow. And so we had some events this week. None of which I went to because I was still getting over the flu.
Wait a minute, before we, you know, if we're what? Still kind of walking down what's changed, I think we ought to definitely highlight that we've sort of become the center of co-working in the, Kyle over at Coco are spending a great deal of time, working with other companies and presenting in other cities about the benefits of co-working. And, I think that, you know, in my conversations with Don and Kyle, I think they pride themselves on unique co-working spaces. And what does he call it? He calls the space down at the Grain Exchange an epic space. And they like putting co-working spaces inside these epic spaces.
So, which is a great strategy.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And they're being named to, like some list of the top co-working places in the United States, right? And
yeah, like number 17 or something like that. Yeah.
Do you think they have ideas about expanding to other cities, Phil? I've never really asked them, but
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, they should. They've got a model.
They would like to grow.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, 4 years ago, that certainly didn't exist at all. I don't think anyone had ever really talked locally here about any co-working stuff way back then. Well, maybe about 09-ish somebody might have launched one, but anyway, yeah, they've come a heck of a long way in the last just 2 years, those guys. Yeah
I remember walking through the almost empty space at, you know, when they had the first tables and chairs at the St. Paul location, and you know, and it's now that place is just full, and there's, you know, there's larger offices or more, you know, more permanent type offices at the St. Paul location now. But it's quite the success story. They're always full. There's a waiting list for everything.
Yeah, amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, and they've got that new rail station right out in front of the St. Paul Coco and the new Union Depot across from that, and there's a big resurgence there in Lower Town St. Paul. I love seeing that. So good for them. They got in there early.
Well, let's hope that it continues. If Lawson leaves, buzz that they're going to be leaving St. Paul when their lease runs out. That could just be a negotiating tactic.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. They obviously are going to look at all options to try and get the best deal. And what is it, a year, year and a half away before their lease actually ends?
Yeah. Yeah.
But what is that? That's still like 650 employees in downtown St. Paul. That might be the largest or the second largest employer over there.
Yeah. Yep.
So they definitely want to keep them if they can.
Yep.
No doubt. Yeah.
Well, and okay,
so now let's talk about what went on this last week.
Yeah. So social communities, you went to that, Graham?
Yes, I did. The little lithium reception, I'll call it. It was at 7, you know, the sushi, the fancy sushi nightclub thing at 7th and Hennepin.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'd never been in that place. That's the high rent district. So yeah, they pulled out the stops. Unfortunately, they only attracted about 15 people.
Oh,
and
no.
I think about 4 of them were from Hubbard. And there was an agency guy there. And my friend Donnie Burkholz, who's an analyst with Red Monk, he was there because apparently they're adding lithium as a client in the near future. So I ran into him as soon as I walk in. Hey, Donnie, how do you happen to be here? And he said, you know how I happen to be here? He said, I heard you talk about it on the podcast last week.
Oh,
he said, otherwise, I didn't even know about it. And it's like, well, I think a lot of people didn't know about it because only about 15 people showed up. And they had the finest food out and it was a free bar. And, you know, we were styling.
More for Graham.
We were styling. Yeah. And, you know, and I thought, is this event ever going to get started or we just drink and eat, you know? And then finally, a guy comes around. They had a sales rep there from Milwaukee, and they had some guy from the home office who gave a talk, which was sort of meh, you know, but I mean, you know, about how measuring social and their unique angle on it. And it kind of, it wasn't the greatest presentation, but they did have a free book that their CEO wrote called The Science of Social, with a foreword by Jeremiah Aoyang. And so I grabbed a couple free copies of that.
Who put this on?
Pardon?
Who put this on?
Lithium Technologies, the big social measurement technology firm that's primarily a tool for, you know, big companies. I don't know. Well, agencies use it probably for multiple clients. But, you know, not too many of my smaller clients can probably afford this SaaS solution of theirs. But they probably have tons of large companies in town using that technology. It's been around for several years now.
Gotcha.
But, it was good. I mean, it was okay. But it was quick, came and went quick, about a two-hour deal. And I'm still recovering from the flu like Steve. So it was like, it was my first chance to get out of the house in about 4 days. So
lots of fun.
Took him up on it, you know?
And so Phil, you went to the social media breakfast to shake hands and get the flu, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what was my goal, because flu is a very social illness.
It is. It is.
Did they do a panel on flu?
No. It was a special Thursday event. Social media breakfast usually happens on Friday mornings, but Thursday we were at the Best Buy campus in the theater there for ABC News producer. On social and news gathering. Interesting group and an interesting presentation. I was frustrated from the standpoint that our speaker, who is, I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the name. It's,
I know I didn't recognize it when I saw it announced.
Well, he's a producer, so, which is fine. Dennis Powell from ABC, ABC News. He's a producer. So he was talking about how they use social media, in news gathering. And we talked a lot about, well, I kept asking questions about you know, what they're doing and what they're using to vet what they gather from social media. And, you know, their statements were, well, first he started his discussion with, or his presentation with, "I don't tweet." Which struck me as kind of an interesting way to start a discussion about using social media, about how you don't necessarily use it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine if you, I never feel like you have to use the stuff that you're knowledgeable at. You just need to know how to navigate through it and that sort of a thing. So yeah, it's fine that he doesn't tweet. He does know how to use it and that sort of thing, because Kelly Griller made a point of responding to my tweet by saying that, yes, he does. But I just found it interesting that the first thing you do is you say, okay, I don't use this technology that I'm you know, mining for information, which is cool.
Did that come across as kind of elitist, you know, the New York elitist media?
No, not really. It kind of came across as I don't have time for it. And a lot of people don't have time for it. You know, if you're going to use it to, you know, look for leads or stories or responses and that sort of thing, yeah, you may not have enough time to do that. And he does tweet under the auspice of ABC News. So to say he doesn't necessarily.
Not really true.
At Powell Dennis, probably not really true.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The other frustrating point was asking questions and him constantly deflecting it, saying, I can't answer that because I don't know what the legal ramifications are. It's like, you know, you're talking to a higher level of social media users, which is really what social media breakfast has become. It's not so much a, you know, people hanging out looking for a job as it used to be. So these are social media professionals. And when you ask a question about legality of something or policy and being deflected off, it tends to make it kind of frustrating. But they say that they always do their due diligence as far as get permission and confirm anything they get from Facebook. You know, if it's a picture from Facebook or a video from Facebook or a statement from Facebook, they'll actually reach out to try and confirm that source and authenticate that source. But they don't do that with Twitter.
Oh,
they just post stuff from Twitter.
And I was going to say, do they authenticate things like the Manti Te'o story, or did that come up? I'm curious to know if the hoax.
A little bit of it came up, but it wasn't. You know, we didn't talk about it a whole lot because I would imagine he probably prefaced it by, you know, that's a legal thing, and I'll deflect that. It's like, okay, whatever.
I'm curious. Did a good representation of the local media, you know, the newspaper and TV people, show up at that event or not?
I didn't see anybody that I knew from the local media, other than the social media.
Greg Littman at CCO and people like that? Did they show up?
I don't think I saw Greg that. I did.
Well, they're busy. They got to go to work.
They're working. You know? Yeah. Working.
That's
so
true.
But it was interesting. They asked for questions to be tweeted in, and I tweeted a bunch of questions, but obviously they didn't ask any of them. So, I was interested to see that. I was really taken aback by this. We don't check for, you know, we don't authenticate, tweets. You know, we don't connect with these people after they've made a tweet. We just go ahead and use it and quote from it. But they don't do that with Facebook. And it doesn't seem like, you know, anything you find in the Facebook public stream is equally accessible as anything you find in the Twitter stream. Am I not wrong on that?
Wasn't there a story this week about someone that had a lawsuit against some publications for publishing photos on Twitter?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. No, he did say that when photos on Twitter, they do, if they have any media within Twitter, they do authenticate that and get permission.
Yeah, okay. There's been too much exposure on stuff like that from media outlets.
Yeah, if there's a photo on Twitter, they'll actually endeavor to get it fixed and get it taken care of. But I don't know. To me, and I appreciate that. I think that's wonderful, but I don't necessarily know if that's legally you have to do that. Because these social streams are in the public view. If it's in the cause of news reporting. Now, if you're going to, and I know that draws that line of, are you profiting from a photo? But it was a, it was an interesting discussion as far as that goes. The, I think the big takeaway, though, was that for a lot of this mining on social media, he says he relies on his 24s. And that's his term for people that work for the company that are 24 years old, make $24,000 a year, and work 24 hours a day.
Oh, funny.
So we call, they call on their 24s to go through.
Oh, my God. It's funny, but it's not, you know.
Yeah, right, right.
And I said, you know, I said to him, I said, you know, why don't you authenticate what you find in Twitter? Well, we usually are drawing from accounts that are already authenticated by Twitter. And I said, well, if you're drawing from an account that's authenticated by Twitter, they know they're using Twitter. Those accounts are using Twitter to feed what they want you to hear. And, you know, I said, I'd posit that, the real story, the real news would be in the non-authenticated accounts.
Yep. And he said, the common folks.
His response to me was, yes.
So is he saying they only draw from authenticated accounts with the blue check mark, you mean?
Yeah, that's what he was talking about.
I'll be damned. Say, can anybody do that now? Get an authenticated account?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. What do they make you go through to do that? Do you know, or?
I don't know.
I might try it.
I've never done it.
I might try it just to see what the process is like. I thought I read where anybody could do that. Now, didn't they used to like limit it to only those that they thought were famous enough to deserve it?
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
And had, you know, bazillions of followers and things like that. But Graham, you're a celebrity.
Oh, well, sure. Right. You know, I
wouldn't want anybody other, you know, get you confused with other Graham Thickenses.
Well, yeah. Yeah, there you go. You know, I don't buy followers, though. But did you read that post by the guy who that founded Omniture?
No.
He said, why I buy followers and why you should, too, or something like that.
I just saw that article, but I didn't have a chance to read it.
Well, it was interesting. And basically, I think he did it like a lot of people do. He started his Twitter account, and I guess he thought he was famous, and he started playing around with it, and he noticed nobody was following him. You know, so, you know, famous or well-known or not, he apparently didn't have enough going on Twitter to attract followers. So he decided to start buying them, and he did. And this was his post saying why it's okay, you know, because he did. Now it's all okay for us to do this.
Well, and that's like the, you know, get a fake Facebook girlfriend for $20. That just came out, right?
And then kill her off.
Well, I mean, it's
sex for the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
Oh,
jeez.
Yeah, I just can't see buying followers, though. I mean, I had friends tell me this, really smart friends tell me early on, do not do any of that stuff. Do not. No matter how much you're tempted, don't do it. Twitter will, you know, punish you, and, you know, the search gods or whatever will punish you. Don't buy followers. It's like, oh, okay.
You know what, though? I'll tell you, there are services, and the ones that I know of are in the Philippines, and the services will do things like seed your customer form, hire them, and they get into threaded discussions about your product or service. And it's because, just like when I was delivering soda pop when I was in college, it was drilled into my head that an empty cooler doesn't sell. A full cooler does. So you've got to make sure that you've got plenty of soda in there that's cold. And if you only have a few things remaining, people are a little suspect of, well, how come somebody didn't buy that? And it's the same thing with forums. You're not going to be the first one to go in and start a thread. And so I think about that a lot, because there are a lot of companies that I know personally that have taken advantage of those sorts of services to go in and start seeding comments on their blog and things of that nature.
Hmm. So, and basically, is it humans that just go in, that they hire for 2 cents a comment or
yep,
something?
Exactly.
And,
Yep.
Well, you know, starting a community, a forum, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, has got to be a tough thing to do, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and yeah.
You got to goose it, I guess.
To get a critical mass of people that are even interested.
Yeah. Well, so. And that's kind of what this guy was saying about Twitter, I guess, you know, but anyway, think times have changed in Twitter over 4 years for sure. Yep. You know, maybe Twitter is encouraging it now. I don't know.
So, Tim, I'm curious about this Radio Shack Ends Mobile Pact with Target Stores link. I don't know if you put that there or Graham put that there, but...
That sure didn't sound like it was very lucrative for Radio Shack.
Well, no, it didn't. No. But...
Leave it to Radio Shack to screw a deal like this up.
Well,
it's like, yeah. What did they go into it saying? Okay, sure, we'll give you 102% if we're in your stores. Like, what?
Yeah. Well, and you look at all the phones that are in there now in a typical Target display, and it's, you know, if I'm a newbie person walking in trying to figure out what phone to buy, I'm going to stand there a long time trying to figure out what to buy.
That's why they have people there to help you.
Yeah, but the people behind the counter are, you know, you typically have one or two people in electronics, you know, and they're not necessarily phone-centric. They're doing everything.
Well, the deal with the Radio Shack was that they had the people that were there in the department. So there's at least just one person phones. There just for phones. And they are the quote phone expert, you know, as expert mm-hmm. as any mid 20s minimum wage employee can be. But,
right.
You know, but it was competitive with what you got at, say, Walmart. You know, they also have the same problem where their department employees are not, you know, totally up on everything. But they know a bit.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting to see, you know, Radio Shack couldn't pull this off. Target may do something by themselves. They've been doing these little mini Apple Store kinds of things now. Mm-hmm. You've seen those yep. around town. So it's likely that they're going to continue to do kiosks like that. I wouldn't be surprised to see a, you know, AT&T or Sprint or T-Mobile kiosk in there.
Well, it's got to be tough, though, for mass merchants. The whole point of being a mass merchant is you're low on labor and you're high on merchandise and self-service. So to try to figure out how to add value by having actual humans in there helping has got to be really hard.
Yeah, I don't think of Target or Walmart or even Radio Shack as a place to go if I need a phone. I mean, I know they have them and I can buy one there. I just don't ever think about, oh, I'm going to do that. I just go to T-Mobile store.
Right.
Or maybe Costco if they have got a crazy deal on a phone. Well, something like that.
And I got to tell you, the Verizon wireless store in Eden Prairie, there's a new one on Flying Cloud Drive. I went in there the other day and I needed some help because my account was not functioning properly for my iPad. And I got to tell you, I was pretty impressed by the depth of knowledge of some of the people in there. It was like, whoa. It was atypical at best, or at worst, and it was more Genius Bar-like at best. It was pretty good. So maybe everybody's recognizing that to compete in a world where you're selling commodities and you're doing transactions isn't going to cut it if you've got a bricks and mortar store. You've got to figure out how to add some value. So. I'm interested in the whole shelf talker thing where you've got, you know, Apple did it where they put iPads next to all the products in the store. So you can actually look up stuff and watch videos and so forth. And I'm seeing a little bit more of that happen. I'm seeing some tests at Best Buy and so forth. But, hey,
I think JCPenney's doing that too, where they, you know, they'll have iPads all through the store.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, hey, I wanted to also mention that Spice Apps, the guys that did Clove, which was right. that fun social media product and so forth, they released an alpha of something called Browser Tap. Now, they showed this at Mini Demo.
Yeah.
But I actually got in and used it and so on. And
slick, isn't it?
It's pretty cool. Well, you know, especially since... You know, it's one thing to go and put in a URL and use browser shots and get a bunch of screen grabs of what your app looks like, but you can't actually use your website or your web app and actually see how it functions within these different browsers. And you can do that with browser tap because you're essentially using a browser in a virtual environment. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure.
So that'll be a big help to developers, but it'll also be a big help to anybody that's developing any kind of a site and wants to see what it looks like and how it performs in Internet Explorer and Firefox and so forth. So
yeah, that's one of the most thankless tasks that web designers and developers talk about, you know. It's just drudgery. Yeah.
So this Leap Motion, have you guys seen this video?
I've heard about it anyway. Yeah.
Well, it's a little box. They show it sitting in front of an iMac as an example, and we'll put a link in the show notes, but oh my gosh. I mean, it's pretty cool to be able to actually just manipulate what's on the screen with your hands. So it's like an air mouse, if you will, or an air.
An air mouse.
Yeah, an air mouse.
That's a good description of it.
An air mouse.
And so what's the deal with them teaming up with Best Buy?
Yeah, they announced an exclusive or a limited time exclusive, I guess. Right, Tim?
Yeah, I thought this was kind of interesting. As you know, I didn't really understand exactly what this was. It's some sort of a motion controller, I guess, for gaming. It looks really cool, but their go-to-market exclusively with Best Buy, I thought, was really kind of strange.
Yeah, well, now we know why Hubert Joly was headed out to CES, because I know Leap Motion was there. They did not have a booth presence, but there was definitely some backroom stuff going on. I think it's kind of funny that they're, you know, that, well, it's not funny, but, you know, they're going with Best Buy because they couldn't get into Apple stores, probably, but, you know, why would Apple want it, you know? But these guys, you know, out in the valley, these guys are the darlings. I mean, they've raised
so much buzz about them. Yeah.
Andreessen's behind it. They've raised so much money. They're just, you know, they're going to rule the world, supposedly, and we shall see. You know, it apparently there's a lot of users that pre-ordered it that are kind of ticked off that they're still waiting, you know. But when does it say people can start buying this at Best Buy? Did it even say
February? I thought,
oh, that's
for pre-orders, yeah.
Oh, in the pre-order at BestBuy.com, you mean, that kind of stuff, or
no, in the stores as I read it. Tim?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
They won't actually be able to walk out with one, though.
No.
No.
No. It'll be a while. Yeah. Okay.
But it's $70, and this is just a guess, but I don't know. I've been trying to figure this out by looking at stuff online and different reviews and so on. But I've been trying to figure out: do they need app support for this, or is it just a system level driver? That you can choose it as an interface.
No, they need app support.
See, that's a deal killer.
Yeah, and I don't know if you read down in the story, but the guy from Leap Motion was saying this is going to be a huge audience for developers here. Developers have a choice about where they spend their time and money, and we're trying to make a strong case for why they should do it at Leap.
Got it.
So they definitely are seeing the Best Buy arrangement as a way to get more visibility with developers too, which, yeah, I suppose developers go to Best Buy stores.
They go. Well, yeah, I mean, they'll go
where they can get geeky stuff, I guess, you know.
So. Well, when I looked at this, the one thing I thought of, have you guys ever used Prezi, the presentation app?
Heard about it.
Well, seen it. You know, Prezi's kind of cool. It does a lot of cool stuff, and it's got some nice effects and so forth. And I thought about how cool it would be to have a Leap Motion controller for a presentation. So you're standing and you turn around and you just wave your arm and it moves the slide, or you can circle something and so forth.
You should sign up for their developer program. That one, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to buy PowerPoint for Microsoft, but they wouldn't sell. So, geez.
That would be a good use for that, though. I mean, you know, there's, I'm sure, all kinds of uses, but gaming is where it always start, you know, the discussion always starts on stuff like that. Just like for the Canopy touch sensitive iPhone case, you know, it's the gamers that are all over it first. Right.
So there was a piece here that I think you put in, Tim, about the University of Minnesota awarded $28 million grant to lead development of next generation microelectronics. And the first time that I saw that, I think was a day ago or 2 days ago. And, you know, immediately my reaction is, you know, so a little bit of a yawn. But because I know that one of the great ways to predict the future is to look at what's happening at component level stuff. And so if you understand what's happening with chips and you understand what's happening with, you know, various components and so on, then you can at least get a sense of how designers and engineers will build that into product, or maybe even what potential products can come out of it. And when I looked at this, as I went, oh my God, it's about spin-based computing. And so, you know, this is a big deal for them to be part of this because of the future of software in silicon and chips. And especially when you see a company like TI embracing the open source Zigbee protocol, which is what one of the protocols SmartThings is using, and it's used in other Internet of Things devices. And TI's rolled out a system on a chip and tools and all that stuff. You know, this whole area is just going to explode in 2013.
Yeah, look at the other universities that are part of this, and they're all very well known. Oh, MIT, yeah. Carnegie Mellon,
yep.
The kind of places where you'd think they would be leading this, but the U is leading this.
Yeah.
My concern is $28 million sounds like a lot of money, but not for the university. They'll burn through that in no time.
They'll probably build a building.
Yeah, right. or they'll hire more administrators.
Let's hope not.
Yeah. Oh God, are they taking a beating on that?
I just wish they would lower tuition. That's all. That's all I want.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
I'd walk onto that campus and see all the building, and I think, yeah, this is great and all, but who can afford to go here anymore?
Well, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to the fall 2012 issue of Inventing Tomorrow, which is you can download the PDF or view the interactive magazine. It's done by the College of Science and Engineering at the U of M. And it'll just, what's nice about it, it'll give you, I flipped through it. I haven't like read the whole thing, but it'll give you a little bit of a sense of what the U's doing and how they're sort of positioning their, you can almost kind of tap into how they're thinking about this stuff and why this grant's kind of cool. But I don't know. I got really excited about it. You know, I've been excited for a long time about graphene, which is essentially a carbon-based lattice at a single micron level. And people go, what are you talking about? Well, people are, you know, organizations and even designers are looking at how to build fabrics and textiles and even paint that'll be graphene-based because graphene conducts electricity. And so you can send electrons down the lattice. And so you could, in theory, have a light switch that you could flip and it would change the color of your paint. Or you could have fabric that would light up and, so, you know, electric clothes, right? So people are talking about how you can use your body motion to charge the battery in your phone, for example. And so there's a lot of stuff going on in this space. And I get back to the whole smart home thing and everything that's going on. It's some pretty exciting stuff. And it's basic and it's still in the research phase in a lot of ways and all of that. And maybe it'll be 2014 before we see a lot of this stuff come out. But boy, it's so great to have the U of M at least doing what they're doing at the level they're doing it at.
Well, and I was going to say, we can't have a discussion about Spintronics without mentioning Minnesota's own NVE Corp, which has been at this Spintronics game for a long time. This company was founded in 1989 by a PhD out of Honeywell and still has offices in the vicinity of Golden Valley, the big Honeywell presence there. But they dubbed themselves leaders in practical spintronics. A lot of people don't know about them. They're a public company, have been for several years, probably, gosh, at least 10 years, I think. So NVE.com is where you can read more about them. They started out with government contracts and have been commercializing spintronics since then for, you know, several years now. And growing, you know, nicely, growing gradually over the years. It hasn't been a huge, you know, vertical ascent.
Yeah.
But these guys are major experts in this field.
Well, that's pretty cool because the website is super geeky.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, these guys are like physics PhDs.
Yeah, I mean they're way, way, way out in front, and they're selling, you know, analog sensors and digital sensors, medical sensors. You know, so again, this is the component level stuff that's being built into finished goods. Mm-hmm. And I don't know enough about it to even know what the hell a magneto resistor is.
Yeah, they give a
Phil,
pretty
good Phil edge. Does. Phil knows
yeah.
all about
oh,
that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Phil knows.
I was using it just the other day.
Yeah. What he was using was his spin cycle in his washing machine. Yeah.
Isn't that the same thing?
It all ties together.
Oh my gosh!
So spin technologies, basically they're harvesting the power from all those spin classes that go on around the world, right? That's in lifetime fitnesses and stuff.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
That's the bikes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. Okay,
there we go.
See, I got a good.
Thanks for educating our listeners, Phil.
Well, the thing to remember about spintronics is it's nanotechnology, you know, another big buzzword from the early 2000s, you know.
Well, I remember going to at E-Tech in San Diego. Yeah, you remember, you were there yeah, at that one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, which was awesome to just walk over to the table. There's Jeff Bezos and you know, Tim O'Reilly's they're chatting up a storm and, you know, yep. Cory Doctorow's there. And Mitch Kapoor and all these people. Anyway. But I sat through an IBM presentation on spintronics and what they were doing with magnetic storage. And, you know, I kind of pride myself on being able to at least, you know, be able to conceptually understand something. Totally clueless. I had no idea what the hell this guy's talking about. And, of course, IBM slides, there's like 4,000. It's like if there's any white pixels, there's 4,000 things crammed into this white space. You know, you can't even figure out what the hell these diagrams are and what they do and so forth. So I got to go back and get my my engineering degrees.
Oh, man. Get a PhD in physics.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I'll just do that.
In your spare time.
In my spare time. Well, I can take that all online now. Doesn't Khan Academy have a PhD in
there you go. Yeah.
In electrical engineering?
In physics?
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Why not? Well, so we started off the show, boys, talking about the 200th podcast, and I've had in a very nice way, I've had people say to me, you know, it's really great that you guys are still podcasting, you know, as though we're these old guys, you know, who still podcast, but you know what, podcasting is continuing to grow, and now when you get into this whole thing about content marketing. And, you know, content strategy and so forth, podcasting it's a big deal. Now, not everybody listens to an hour long show. And a lot of times shows that are,
sometimes, you know, we don't
10 minutes. Yeah. Well, there's that. But, the thing that I loved was and we'll put this article in the show notes, but about podcasting stats, Edison Research just did a study on the podcast consumer. And awareness of podcasting has grown 105%. Well, that didn't mean anything to me, but the audience growth hasn't changed much since 2011, but the number of shows and the quality of shows is going up, so the choices are changing. And so rather than just listen to, you know, Joe Schmedlap's podcast where you can't understand what he's saying because he's using a $2 mic plugged into his old laptop, those days are moving away pretty quickly, and it's more toward you know, quality shows, good content. Content is what matters, right? And podcasting is continuing to grow.
Yeah, it's coming back in style. It's kind of like Roy Orbison's glasses. You know, he wore those things so long, they came back into style.
So I shouldn't throw out all those old ties I have, right? Because someday we'll start never. Wearing ties again. Oh, yeah, God,
all those big wide ones.
All right, here's a.
I think it's, you know, it's important to note that you know, in this quest for content, yes, people are looking to podcasts, but you know, there is this caveat that good content is good content. So don't, for the sake of doing a podcast, just put crap on. You know, it's very easy to put podcasts on that will not work because they're just, you know, they're boring. And, you know, like this one. I think that, you know, podcasting for the sake of podcasting can be dangerous. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, yep. that's my advice. Be careful. Don't just, you know, make a commitment and then not follow through. So.
Yeah. Well, and don't do it for yourself. Do it for your listener. I mean, it's all about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well said, Mr. Borsch. Yes. Your listener.
Listener.
Well, you know what though? You know, what's funny about that is the fact that I just got done talking to somebody who had, gone to interview for a director level job at a nonprofit. And we were talking about it and she was asking me a bunch of questions and so on about the fact that, well, you know, I don't really have a lot of process and organizational background. And I especially don't have project management type background. I said, wait a minute. You're the one who's always whining to me about the fact that, you know, this is broken, or geez, I went to this site and this didn't happen, or I was working with this organization. I said, you know, because you can intuitively understand what the process is as a user. And I'm always amazed, and this has come up in our conversation, I'm always amazed at how many companies will deliver something and you really realize that they're delivering it because they want to deliver it to grow their business. And it's almost like the user is an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to be user centric and trying to really focus on what is going to add value to them and how they can learn or they can make a decision on whether or not to buy your product. It's a big deal.
Exactly. Yeah, what he said.
Whatever he said.
Yeah, what he said.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about upcoming events because the Mini Analytics Forum is Monday.
Yeah, it's huge. It's over the top. It's going to be a massive crowd at the Carlson School. I think last I heard they had 845 registered. It's a free event, so naturally there will always be a certain amount of no-shows. So go ahead and waitlist yourself if you want to be there. It's a heck of a program. I'll put the link to the Google Doc agenda, the color-coded agenda in the show notes. And there's a lot of great speakers, many from out of town. I mean, it isn't all just local people by any means. Several tracks. There's a social media track. There's a talent track. So it isn't all propeller head stuff, although it's mainly an event for data geeks, you know, data scientists and you know, Hadoop people and R is the other, you know, MapReduce, all these tools that these big time data analysts are using in our local Fortune 500s in particular. There'll be a ton of Target people, United Healthcare people, Medtronic people at this thing. It's probably about half Fortune 500 and half everything else. A lot of startup folks will be there as well, developers. It'll be great. So, yep, it's bigdatamn.eventbrite.com to sign up for that wait list.
Well, and you should do that because there's a very good chance that I'm not going to be able to go.
Oh, you could be one of those no-shows.
I could be because I've got a client that is going to email me later today. about a Monday prep meeting before this workshop I've got to be at all day Tuesday for the client. So I may have to go to that.
Well, no worries. Oh, yeah. I will be reporting and tweeting the event. In fact, I'll be tweeting on Mini Analytics Twitter handle.
Great. Know, so.
Yeah, there I've been helping with social media, and I get to introduce some of the speakers, you know, like Jamie Ostheimer and Donnie Burkholz and Paul Sarnen. And,
great.
Maybe Shivani Khanna from W3I. So I'll be... and then there's a couple of good startups coming, one from Portland called Telligence. And I've met those guys at Defrag, and they're coming all the way to Minneapolis for this event, as are several major sponsor companies as well. So it's quite an event to be put on by a team of volunteers. It's definitely akin to like a mini bar, you know. And it's a lot of work for these volunteers, but they do an unbelievable job. Dan Atkins, who's an independent.
Yeah, good guy.
Danalytics is his, danalytics.net. Yeah, he is. Great guy. Lives in Edina. And then his co-organizer is Sean Larson from Medtronic, who's a, you know, one of their data scientists up there, another great guy. And they work this thing really hard, and hats off to them. You know, they just keeps getting bigger every time they do it. So
what? Yep. And then we've got WordPress MSP at the Nerdery on the 24th. And then this Global Game Jam, is this at the Nerdery?
Yes, it's a global event. So there are just basically stations around the country that do this. It's a 48-hour game development challenge. On Friday, a theme is announced, and there are these teams all over the world that are 48 hours to develop a game on this theme. So
I see. So my son, who is highly interested in game design and game development, could he just go to this?
I don't know, to tell you the truth.
Huh. I'll find out because this is pretty cool. And for anybody that doesn't think that games are a decent business, I can't remember the name. You know, the Breakout 2, or there was a recent game. Doggone it! Here I am doing a hum-a-hum-a trying to figure out.
It's all right. I do it all the time. It's quite fun.
Well.
It's
so,
a nice break in the day.
Yeah. Well, so this, doggone it.
That's okay.
Well, so the cool thing about this game, and maybe I should just edit this out. The cool thing about this game is, it did 500 million in the first 24 hours. And it was Black Ops 2, Call of Duty Black Ops 2. 500 million. They had it released in 16,000 locations around the world. And it was like half a billion dollars for a game? And what movie has ever done that kind of business, and let alone in the first 24 hours?
Really? Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable. So the gaming business is just exploding.
Yeah, it really is.
Midwest PHP conference. And these are all in March. There's not a lot going on in February yet that we know of anyway. Mobile March in March. And how are the signups going, Phil?
They're going well, thank you. And tickets are still available. So do, if you get a chance, get on over there and get registered. We'll have the agenda rolling out next week. And we have our keynote in place, and it promises to be a good event. Speaking of game, we are doing a track on mobile gaming this year, so it should be a great...
Really? Okay. And then mini bar in April. And then before we go, we've got to just talk about one more thing real quickly. There was a link that you put in, Graham, about how Apple's destroying Android from the inside out.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Wasn't that sweet? I wanted Phil and Tim to especially see that.
What a bunch of fanboy shit. Jeez Louise.
Hey, it's a big week for Apple earnings on Wednesday, you know? Everybody's just kind of on the edge of their seat waiting on that, except for the Fandroidies, of course.
Well, and then John Gruber had an interesting post about, but wasn't it curious that Apple closed at exactly $500 on Friday because of all the institutional investors that if it closed at 500 or below would make billions.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of stock manipulation that's been going on. It's actually about It's actually about technical shorts is what it's about. And it'll all come to home to roost on Wednesday when they announce their earnings, which they of course keep very secretive, and
yep,
be a major piece of news all day Wednesday and beyond.
More games rich people play.
Yeah. Well, talk about playing games though. I mean, we are just not in the game. I mean, I'm sorry.
Who?
Us. Anybody that buys stocks.
Oh, no, not at all.
It's just like, oh, man, just not in the game.
We're not traders. We're buy and hold guys, right, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. Buy and hold because it goes up and then it goes way down, and you hold it because you figure it's going to go back up again, and sometimes it never does. Anyway.
But you know what? It goes up a lot more than it goes down. So,
that's true.
And people don't remember that a year ago, Apple was trading around 400. So all of you out there who were smart enough to buy a year ago, you're feeling pretty good.
That's right.
And I predict you'll feel a hell of a lot better after Wednesday, too. But enough.
I do, too. Yep.
Enough of the fanboy stuff.
All right.
Well, we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. Whoop-de-doo.
There's arguments on the other side, so it'll be interesting to see what their quarter looked like.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're just fine.
Yep. Yeah, no, I'm sure they are too. It's just that they've cut way back their component orders and all this stuff. So, there's some thought that the demand is starting to soften for the iPhone 5.
Yeah, but some of that, you don't know how many suppliers they have. If one supplier reported a cutback in orders and they go and squeal it to the press, what does that mean? No one knows the overall component orders of Apple. They don't report.
I can tell you the one thing that I truly believe is if this whole rumor of a cheaper iPhone happens, that will screw the pooch for them. They will officially jump the shark if Apple puts out a cheap product.
Don't they already have a cheap product? It's called the iPhone 4 that
exactly.
get for free on contract.
Exactly.
It's a 4S for $100. So why would they even do something like that?
It's all media conjecture. Read the story about how iOS is beating the pants off Android in every single way except market share. It'll tell you a lot if you really want to know.
Yeah, but Graham, that article is such a fanboy article.
No, it isn't. No, it's numbers. God, numbers don't lie. Read the numbers. Read the numbers of the amount of usage that iOS has over Android. It's not even close. The amount of mobile advertising that iOS attracts. Read it. Like it says, numbers don't lie,
Well, I just want them to do a 5-for-1 stock split and then go back up.
I think it should be a 10-to-1, Steve.
Boy, I'd love that.
It's a psychological thing, everybody's waiting for Tim Cook and Oppenheimer, the CFO, to, make a major announcement. They've been extremely quiet, but something's going to happen soon. I don't know if it's going to be that or if the earnings alone will settle everything out, but they have been strangely quiet. And a lot of people are saying, why,
Well, it's their quiet period before they release.
True.
So they have to be quiet.
Well, maybe, You know, it wasn't the right timing, but, they could have been talking a month ago or something, and they weren't. But they'll be talking on Wednesday.
Yep.
Hey, Steve, I would offer that you, because I know you guys, Graham and Steve, you talk a lot about being busy a lot of the time. you know, hanging on every word from Apple might really free up a lot of time for you guys.
I don't.
Every word, no. You know, I was in looking at a Nexus 7 last night, just so you know.
Just so you know.
Yeah. Well, I've been thinking, you know what? I need to get an Android device. I'm just trying to decide what to get.
Well, they're supposed to come out with the 7.7.
Why do you have to get an Android device?
Because I need to experience it.
Or do you need it for a client?
No, I just need to experience it.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the push-pull. The push-pull is I'm an open source guy. I love open source software. I love open standards.
So that's why you're
the whole thing. And okay. But here's the thing though. At the same time, I'm also very, very aware of all the stuff that's going on with cybersecurity or the lack thereof in many cases. And, you know, as flawed potentially as iOS is, it's still secure and, it's still easier for newbies. So, I mean, there's a lot of advantages, but at any rate, I need to experience Android. I think Android's getting a lot better. And
unfortunately, part of your problem would be deciding which device to buy because there's so goddamn many of them.
Yeah.
You know, how in the hell do you decide? And then,
well, I'll just call, the minute you I'll buy call one, Tim.
Something else comes out the next week that Tim says is better.
Well, no, I think Nexus 7 is a good choice, or the 10 if you want a larger one. But the 7 is handy to carry around with you.
Yeah.
They're supposedly coming up with a 7.7 inch Nexus later in the year. But
yeah.
Well, and what about the rumor that the new Galaxy, which Samsung squelched, is going to be a 4.99 inch?
Screen. Yeah, it'll be a 5-inch. And they're supposed to have a Nexus 5, too, which is coming out later in the year, which will be a 5-inch screen. I think that's getting at the limits of a smartphone, you know, and it's more of a mini tablet.
Yeah.
Don't sit down with that puppy in your pocket.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Crunch.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening this week, too.
Episode 200 of the Minifig Gang podcast.
Spit it out, Bill.
Sorry.
Thanks.
Hey, it was a good
one. We'll see you next time.
Take care.
Yeah.
Crazy. Or something tell me you just might be losing your mind. Oh, you make me think you're crazy, 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 crazy woman. Seems like to me, darling, you may be losing your mind. The way you've been acting lately, baby, now. Oh, you're about to drive me out of my mind. You know I sit in a dark room. Yes. My tears rolling down. Sit there in a dark room. With the tears rolling down from my eyes. You know I can hear my little girl say, my father is a hurting child. suit my clothes. Woo. You know I think I'd move back south. You know I want the weather. You know that good weather just sure suits my clothes. You know I've been here in Chicago so long now, but in the last 2 winters, man, you know I'm almost froze. You know it snowed in Chicago till I could hardly see myself. You know it's snowed in Chicago till I could walk down the street, you know, and I couldn't see myself.